Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Film Pigs podcast. This is a bacon episode with me, Todd, and with Steve Falk.
Oh, hey, Todd.
Are you having a good time in your neck of Los Angeles?
Yeah, my neck is great. How's your neck?
I'm not technically in Los Angeles. I'm in Ventura County, and my neck is, red.
Is that where surfers live? Ventura County? Hang loose, dude.
I don't know about surfers, but guys with big trucks and flags that fly off the back. We have those.
That doesn't sound like a surfing kind of thing to me.
It's not really.
That sounds like a fascist kind of thing to me.
It's a little fascist.
Like fellas who want you to think they're real cool and big and tough.
Yeah, that's
big, tough
exactly.
Guys.
Yeah, they have giant trucks and they're working class, and their trucks cost more than my house, but they're working class, Steve. That's the important thing.
Well, that's nice. Do they own said truck?
I don't really know. I don't ask around a lot, but a lot of the people who have the $60,000 trucks in their driveways also have a speedboat on a trailer sitting outside their house and a giant RV.
RV? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. That's a good look for people.
No, I would get an RV.
It just goes to show you we could go on a vacation. You don't know.
Yeah.
I could be... I could be a man of leisure. You don't know.
I mean, I would have that. I guess my thing is I'm lower than working class because I can't afford an RV or a speedboat or a $60,000 truck. Those are expensive things.
I feel like some of those fellas are not that scared of going into debt.
Is that what it is?
I think maybe that is. I think they're okay with the idea of just being debt ridden.
All right. I hate it. Just having a mortgage, it gives me stress. I don't like it. Car payments and mortgage?
No, they're no good. Sometimes I think about, if I could just pay off my house, but then you're not supposed to do that for some reason.
Why not?
Money.
If I could. Would you? I mean, if I could, I would. I don't care about all that, investment and playing the whatever it is. I would love to not have a monthly payment.
Right.
And then all I have to worry about is fixing the house and keeping up the house. It just seems like it would be a much less stressful life without that, mortgage payment every year.
Yeah. Yes. I think I do believe I could summarize the idea behind it as... Even with safe investments, you would end up making more money putting that money to use, earning other money, rather than paying down your mortgage.
Right.
I don't understand how that's possible, given that a mortgage is so front-loaded, and the interest is front-loaded. And
Yeah.
Seems like a giant scam to me that would be great to get out of.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know, money people. What are you telling us? Are we wrong?
I think maybe there's a stress level to think about, Steve, if you run into the kind of money where you can pay off your mortgage and not have a mortgage payment. There's a stress level to think about.
It's stressful to have money?
It's stressful to have debt, I think. More than money.
But if you have a boat, hey man, you can just go chill out and forget or let your stress wash away on some reservoir.
A broad is expensive. Those things are expensive.
Yeah, apparently, what's that saying? Second best day of your life is getting a boat. First best day of your life is selling it. Have you heard that?
Yeah, I've heard that. My grandfather had a sign on his summer shack wall that said it said boat, his definition of boat had the pronunciation noun, a hole in the water that you pour money into. That's what his sign said. Never forgot that, and I think it's correct.
I'm sorry, Governor, I didn't know you. I was dealing with someone who had palatial vacation estates with boat signs. Ooh la la.
Yeah, it was a really fancy boat. full of pine needles.
My wife, my motor worked.
And my wife water had skate.
my wife's family had a summer place in Fresno. It was a trailer in Fresno, which really begs to the question of like, is that worth it?
Did they own the property it was on?
I don't think so.
This was like a rented parcel with a trailer on.
Yeah, something. Yeah. It was not chic. It was like, it was just barely qualified as the notion of a vacation house.
Uh huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I have friends who I told you about this. You know, one of the only times I went out of town. During this pandemic was to go stay at my friend's place in the desert. Just like, you know, it was just a double wide up on blocks. But the whole reason that they have it is it's, you know, a half hour from one of those fancy desert lakes that go in between Nevada and Arizona and all that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's like two lakes that connect.
Desert lake.
Yeah. So they get houseboats and stuff. So they have the trailer thing so they can hang out in the lake. I guess that kind of makes sense. You know?
I get it. Yeah. I mean, I guess it makes sense.
It's a crash pad. Like if you like skiing and you have kind of a shitty cabin on a mountain that you can crash at just so you can ski, but it's not great.
Right. I feel like even if I sort of felt like I could buy a vacation place, I feel like it would just be one more thing hanging over my head that I would be guilty that I wasn't paying enough attention to.
Yeah, totally. And I feel like I grew up in a family that had, there were summer homes in the family
right.
in various places. So there were a couple that I went to, and the main complaint always was it was too much extra stress having a second home.
Right. Yeah. That's what I assume. I don't know.
My folks and my grandfather split the cost of the summer home that we had on a lake in Ware, Massachusetts. And, you know, my grandfather couldn't unload it fast enough. All he wanted was for all of us to get the fuck out so he could get rid of it. And he was and he lived in the town where it was. Like his house was like 5 minutes away. Yeah.
So it wasn't even like a deal to go take care of it.
No. He just had to take care of it all winter. And he wound up renting. We rented it to, you know, a teacher lady. So
Right on.
I always wondered too, because like that house kind of gave me the creeps, you know, sometimes. I feel like it was haunted. So being a lady alone in that lake house in the winter. Sounds creepy to me.
Yeah, it does sound. I would hate to be. Every time I'm a lady, I get really creeped out.
By yourself,
I don't like
in a house on a lake. Well, even if I was, you know, even if I was a man and not a lady, I'd probably still be a little bit on edge.
I'd be edgy. I'd be edgy.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I guess we should talk about movies because this is the Film Pigs podcast.
Yeah.
As much as I love talking about summer homes, I kind of wish this was the summer home podcast.
Yeah.
Because that's a fun topic. But
it is. I've never had one, so I would just sort of react to you, but that's fine. I can quit.
Well, you'll get one day. Well, you went on summer vacations at some point, right?
We drove. We got in the car and drove places.
Okay. And what happened when you drove somewhere? Were they all day trips or were there any overnighters?
No, we would stay in like motels. We'd stay in really shitty motels.
Yeah.
That's it. That's it. That's all I did.
Yeah. But my summer homes were basically really shitty motels, but like they belonged to us.
I get it. You don't have to be defensive. That's fine.
You're making me feel like I was privileged.
Privileged,
I guess I was.
You're a privileged man. I literally never went on an airplane with my dad.
Never, ever?
We never went on a family flying vacation. Ever, ever, ever. Never.
We didn't do it very much, but we did. Yeah. We went to Florida because my grandparents were there.
That's a good reason.
We got to Disneyland, but we didn't fly to Indiana. We drove. I don't know why.
Well,
you drive.
What is that, like 20 hours?
I feel like it was 3 days or something.
Well, wow.
But I mean, it was a family, so I don't know. We were stopping places, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like it was a long drive.
I feel like I just talked to someone, and I don't remember who it was. They have four kids. Who was I talking to? Four kids. Not even a minivan, an SUV, and they drove 20 hours or no, more than that, like 30 hours straight to their like in-laws' place in Ohio or Iowa during the pandemic. Four kids never stopping except to go pee.
Wow.
Like they didn't even stay at a hotel. I don't remember. Oh, I know who it was. I remember who it was.
Yeah, that sounds horrible.
Yeah, this random woman I met when I was volunteering, because I'm a really nice guy, recently, and they had done that, and I was like, how the fuck did you drive for like 32 hours with four kids in an SUV, not even a minivan?
Were the parents changing driving places? Were they taking turns?
Yeah, they were taking turns, but still, that's bananas.
Yeah, it's insane. Yeah. It's insane.
And the kids barely fought. I don't know. They did something right. But
they gave them pills?
No, but they live in Rancho Cucamonga, so they just may not be that smart. I'm kidding. That means nothing.
It's funny to disparage areas. It's just funny.
Well, when you name a place something so silly like Rancho Cucamonga, I mean, it's a gift. It's real. I'm not mad at it because it's a literal gift. No,
it's fun. It's a fun thing to say.
It is.
Like rutabaga or something.
Rutabaga.
Like that.
Rancho Cucamonga. Why would you name a place that? It's so silly. Was Cucamonga not silly at one point? I guess it wasn't.
Well, yeah, it probably means something very serious.
I think it means cucumber ranch. Rancho Cucamonga.
Cucumber ranch. It sounds delicious.
I'll go there. It's kind of watery and tasteless, but it's not bad for you.
Yeah.
All right, movies, yes.
All right, let's talk about movies. So I was trying to figure out what the hell to come up with as a topic. And I brought one up to Steve, and he said, no, we already did that one, which was like the moments in movies that were so funny, it made us cry. And because we've already, I guess, done that, I was like, well, what about movies that weren't necessarily funny but made us cry the whole time? The whole time that they were happening. So we both have come up with a list of five. I have a couple alternates because I feel like Steve, maybe at least one of my titles might be one of your titles too.
I don't think mine are bizarre. And I'll tell let's talk about, okay, anyway, you lead it. But let's talk about the exercise in general and crying in movies.
Oh, okay, sure. Okay, crying in movies. Yeah. What is that for you?
What I found in sort of racking my brain for this is that I'm dead inside, and I have been for a long time. But there was a time maybe I wasn't as dead. And what I kind of realized is a lot of it really has to do with, it's less the movie and more what's going on in my life, that thing hitting exactly what's going on in my life at that time.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. Like your viewing of a movie coincided with some kind of event.
Or just the state of mind I was in that at that time.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
So it's not always so much like that this is the saddest movie, or it's just it happened to have hit me specifically at that time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my list is a little bit of a cheat because a few of the titles are movies that I've seen. Because you don't watch movies multiple times very much. Yeah, I'm a repeat watcher of movies. So some of these are movies that I cry during because I know what they've done to me before. So as soon as I get the preambles of things that eventually will make me cry, I start crying right away. So I'll cry through the whole movie just knowing where it's going to take me. Versus there are some on the list that as soon as it started, I was getting emotional. And then basically at a certain point was just, you know, holding back tears the whole time. You know how you do that.
I do.
You choke and tears drip and it's stupid. But yeah.
Now are you one of those lady people who like want to watch it?
Lady people.
Yeah. Who watch movies specifically so you can cry? Do you seek out sad movies because you need a little emotional release?
Not often. But I mean, sometimes it will. You know, for me, the movie that makes you cry is a release because it's weird because that's what the movie's supposed to do.
Right.
It makes it okay for me to cry, and I do feel like I have, you know, like classic American man shit. So I, you know, crying all the time wouldn't be cool. So nice to have a movie that allows me to cry for most of its running time and I won't be considered a douchebag. Maybe I'll be considered a cool man who's unafraid to show his emotions for that time.
That would be nice to think.
But it's probably not true.
No,
it's not. It's not, no. But that's what it is for me, I think, in a lot of these cases.
Okay. How should we do this?
Why don't we go back and forth? You start with a title. We'll do five apiece. Give All me right. one.
Well, I have more than five, but you know.
Well, let's see how we do with the running time.
No, I don't need to. I may swap some out.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
These aren't technically, I'm not crying the entire movie, but whatever.
Sure.
I'm gonna say this is just sort of a gimme, but this is the hardest I remember crying in a movie ever, and that was Schindler's List.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Now, that's crazy because Schindler's List, I didn't cry at all. I mean, I was moved by it and there was a lot that was engaging about it, but it didn't make me cry. So were you crying the whole time or was there a moment that triggered?
I don't think it was the manipulative stuff with the little girl, but it may have been the girl in the red dress.
It may have been,
but it wasn't the whole thing. Cause I do remember being very appreciative of Ralph Fiennes, performance. I thought it was really exciting. Mm-hmm. I remember my memory. I saw it with our friend Jack, but I'm not sure if that's true in San Francisco. And I do remember walking out of the theater with I think I just had a t-shirt and it was just covered in snot. It was like a puddle. I've never watched that movie again. I don't know if it would move me as much. Who knows? There's a lot of sort of kind of like social art, like pop culture weight behind that movie that's been added to it, and it was more pure when I saw it. So I
you
don't
mean
know
like backlash, critical?
Yeah, sure. It when you say those titles, it comes up with this whole sort of like word cloud of talk about the movie rather than just the pure experience of me sitting in that balcony in San Francisco watching it.
Right.
But at the time it affected me deeply, and I don't have a personal connection to the Holocaust, except, you know, knowing it didn't actually happen. But beyond that,
I don't have a connection to the Holocaust either, but I've always found it
sad.
You know, well, I find it sad. I find it morbidly fascinating that that human beings could do such a thing. So when I was in high school, I, you know, obsessively studied it, you know, on my own time. So I think I cried a lot then.
Yeah.
In high school by myself looking at things.
Sure.
So when I got to Schindler's List, it didn't. it didn't have that kind of punch for me, I guess. I don't know.
I get it. You don't care about the Holocaust. That's fine.
No, I do care. I felt like it was too much of a movie and not enough of a nightmare. If that makes any sense.
Sure.
That's generally my problem with Holocaust movies is they're movies.
Yeah.
And you know, I saw real footage. I don't know, like old footage.
Yeah.
That's grainy but it's real and it's horrifying. And
yeah.
I don't know. No movie ever lived up to that.
Yeah. For me. I get it.
I'll start, you know, I'm just going to say with my first one, cause like what made me think of this after the crying because of laughing, we'd already done that, was Soul was one of the last new movies I saw.
Yeah.
The Pixar movie.
Yeah.
And I really didn't know going into it at all what it was, you know? Uh-huh. And when I don't want to say anything, but when the character's look changes at a certain point, not too deep into the movie, I thought, oh, is this an Inside Out again kind of movie? That was a jarring moment because leading up to that, all of the stuff leading up to that was so sweet. Like the stuff about his dream coming true and being a jazz musician and his struggle and all that I was already crying like at the beginning of Up, you know, and I liked Up, but Up, I didn't cry like after that initial first act. So this one, like I was crying and then the new element of the story came in and I was like, what? And then it's like within 10 minutes I was crying again. And I was crying a lot through that whole movie. Yeah. And I don't know if it was because I know the sort of Pixar formula, because, you know, I was going through the Pixar titles and I was like, pretty much all four Toy Story movies are like that for me. I cry a lot during those and Ratatouille, I definitely cry a lot during. So I don't know. Is it a formula that I'm familiar with and I know where it's going to take me, like the movies that I've seen a bunch of times that make me cry?
Yeah. Pixar's trying to make you cry.
Yeah, for sure. But Soul did a really good job of it is what... That's what I'm saying.
I think a lot of it, I mean, it was very sweet. I think to me, there's something about both the jazz score and the Trent Reznor score that is also so atmospheric about that movie that really adds to it. I'm lucky my kids really like it, so I've seen it or part of it like 6-7 times now.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've also seen Frozen probably 100 times, but...
That's too bad, I'm sorry.
Yeah. That movie does not make me cry, except when it comes on again.
when it starts, no.
No, really?
Oh, God damn it.
One movie or two movies they love are the Incredibles movies, and those are incredible movies, so I don't mind watching.
Yeah, those are fun movies. And they have those movies have those moments that I get choked up for sure.
Yeah.
But they're not quite the crying the whole time movie.
No.
Because it's a lot of good action and
you
know, fun imaginative.
Soul's a good one. Well, along those lines, then I'm going to pick Toy Story 3.
That one is rough.
Yeah, and that one, in particular, it's about the kid getting too old for them, and then a lot of the stuff with Ned Beatty and isn't necessarily particularly sad, but they do have the story of his origin story. With him and Big Baby, you know, getting left out in the rain, and that whole stuff is real sad. And then, and definitely the moment when they're on the trash compactor about to get burnt up, and they're all just holding hands, waiting for doom. It's so fucking dark.
Yeah, it really.
Like,
is.
Oh, here comes oblivion, children. It's like. What the fuck? I mean, but you know, but Pixar goes there. I mean, certainly, like, I don't love Inside Out, but it's It's mad complicated and
yeah, for sure.
And sophisticated and soul is too in a slightly different way. Toy Story 3, while it's more linear and straight ahead, it certainly they're not afraid to like be real fucking dark. And I appreciate that. I like that. And I think it does a good job also teaching our kids that like life is brutal, you know, and that they get it. It's just I think it's doing a good thing, actually.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I mean, even like Coco, which may be on your list, I don't know, but
I like Coco. It's not on my list.
Literally, yeah, all about death. Like that's hard. That's a hardcore movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and Soul is all about death. Coco and Soul, and in a lot of ways, I mean, I guess Toy Story 3 is more about aging and becoming irrelevant. But like, so much of that feels like it's in the same realm as a movie about death.
Yeah, in a way, though. But for some reason, I find it sad. I find death less sad than losing someone you love, Jesse losing, you know, Woody, or the kid Andy no longer wanting them, you know, of being irrelevant and being replaced. That
it's horrible to be abandoned. Probably more than
I think. Yeah, I think that's what I mean. I was going to say something else, but I forget. I know what I was going to say. Well, like death is so sort of, you know, when I have a 5-year-old and when you have a kid that age, there's a lot of death talk, you know, like when are you going to die? You know, shit like that.
Sure.
But like any music I play, she always goes, she's like, who's this? I'm like, just tonight. This is David Bowie. He dead? Well, yeah. And then and what I realize is like, I'm just the music I put on like the most just like through Alexa, which means I don't have to like, you know, hit any buttons or program it, you know, because I'm often running around busy here. It tends to be Prince, Tom Petty, and David Bowie. Those are just like go-to.
They're all dead.
And I was like, oh yeah, they're all dead. And then the fourth would be Paul Simon, who's not, which is good, but. No, he die?
Yeah. No, but Paul Simon's alive. He's just got a lot of domestic trouble.
He's just him and Edie Brickell are like beating each other up a lot.
None of it's pleasant when you get to a certain age, it seems.
Yeah. Anyway, Toy Story 3. There you go.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Okay, like I couldn't decide. I wanted sports movies. I'm a sucker for. You know?
Yeah.
So I was trying to pick one that made me cry. And there's more than one. And it was sort of a tie between Rudy and The Rookie.
Oh.
And I think I only am siding with The Rookie because the first time I saw The Rookie, I was crying the whole time.
Wow.
Whereas I don't know if that was true with Rudy. It wasn't. Now if I watch Rudy, I start crying right away.
What is The Rookie?
The Rookie is a baseball movie starring Dennis Quaid, and it's based on a true story about a guy who was positioned to get into the big leagues and then had an injury and didn't, and then just started a new life and became a school teacher and was coaching the Little League team.
Uh-huh.
And he challenged his team to win a championship, you know, as underdogs. And they and they knew his story of having almost gone to the show.
I remember they challenged him to get to. Yeah.
Yeah. To, yeah. So they say, if back, we win the championship, then you have to go and try out for the. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I remember this. Yeah.
And the best scene, the best moment, like I cry every time it happens. There's a moment where he's lost the bet with his team. He's got to go. He's like, I can't do this. I'm too old. and he takes a baseball and he stops the car with his kids. And there's one of those speed signs that tells you how fast you're going, one of those digital readout signs.
Sure.
And he goes and he pitches the ball past the sign, and it says 76. And he sadly gets in his car and drives off. And then you see the sign like sort of short out, and then it says 96.
Oh, wow.
And like that moment kills me every time. It's just
wow.
It's,
and you're not so even good. A baseball fan who's that in tune with exactly what those numbers mean, right?
No, no. I just know 96 is faster than 76 by yeah. a lot.
Exactly. Oh my God, that's funny.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know shit about football either, but Rudy works for me. I mean, sports movies work for me.
Yeah.
You know? So and the funny ones too. I don't know why. I don't know why.
I sometimes find myself cheering so hard I want to cry. I'm like, it's close to crying during like action movies when like good action movies when the good guy finally get like kicks ass and I'm so happy. I find that. Okay.
Yeah, sure.
All right. My third one. Yeah, this is a movie that if I'm in the right mood, it can just get me the whole time because I do find it evocative and both directed and acted incredibly well all around. It's just a good movie that Peter Weir directed with Jeff Bridges called Fearless.
I knew it. This was on my list. This is why I knew you would have this on your list. I knew it.
Yeah, Fearless is, you know, Jeff Bridges was at a time my acting hero. And this was sort of peak Jeff Bridges for me. And this is, you know, where he's like one of the a survivor of a plane crash. And he comes out of the experience having been so terrified when he thought he was about to die, basically rendered fearless, emotionless. And it's based on a novel, and he kind of helps a few of the other, a little kid who kind of glomps onto him, and Rosie Perez, who lost her baby in the crash, and helps her and others sort of come to terms with the loss and the guilt, but meanwhile he's ignoring his wife the whole time and kind of coming dangerously close to the stifled emotions starting to bubble back up. But it's really sad and odd, the movie. It's very, very strange, kind of creepy. And certainly the recreation of the crash midway or near the end actually, is really brutal but also beautiful. And I haven't seen it in a long time, but I saw it many, many times. And it always got to me.
I watched it not too long ago.
Yeah.
You know, with the family. And I mean, just it, again, this is one of those movies that I've seen a bunch of times, and it really does hold up, and it's really good. And you're right, it's also really weird.
Yeah.
But just the plane crash, the way Jeff Bridges, his face looks mm-hmm. in the plane crash sequences is enough to make me cry.
Oh, he's terrified. And then, yeah, it's...
But then weirdly peaceful sweet and loving while in the midst of dying. It's
when the light is, yeah. And I had the the still... somehow I got a promotional still from the movie, an 8x10, and it was him in his. It was a black and white shot of him in his suit walking out of the cornfield with a baby very casually in his arm,
yeah,
like just looking like the coolest, bossest, badass in the world, and I really loved it a lot. And my old cat Olive used to sit on my desk because it was actually like in front, like behind my computer, basically. Yeah. She would sit and stare at it for some reason. I don't know why. She just loved that image.
Huh.
I have a lot of photos of her. Yeah. I used to sort of like blog about it. It's really funny.
That's awesome. So for my third one, I guess I was trying to find because I am a sucker for really formulaic family movies. If they're in the right, it's like this right pocket where they exist. Where
like Taboo or Taboo 2?
Yeah, Taboo 2. That kind of family film. Yeah. Like when the family fucks, when they fuck each other. Yeah. It makes me cry because it seems so, so joyful. Anyway, I was thinking about, you know, there's lots of, you know, animal movies, you know?
Animals.
Yeah, sweet animals, pets, getting lost or getting
Watership
injured,
Down.
Getting freed. Not Watership Down so much.
Cujo. No.
Cujo's not a great example, although that's a very good film.
Marley and Me?
That's more what I'm talking about. Marley and Me didn't work for me, but Dolphin Tale actually worked for me.
Is this your number three or four?
No, my number, like I was trying to think about it, it was either Dolphin Tale or the movie Wonder, which is not an animal movie. It's a weird looking kid movie. With Julia Roberts. I normally can't deal with the Julia Roberts thing, but this Wonder made me like out of the gate it starts and you're like, oh geez, they're gonna do this. You know what they're gonna do to you. You know what I mean? And it's, you can either resist it, you could say, oh fuck you, this is so manipulative, I see it. Or you can go, okay. Do what you will. And Wonder, it's just so sweet. And the kid is really good. And I don't know. It just, that movie killed me. I read the book too first because Colby was reading it.
Trying to read.
What, you know, so it totally worked for me.
Wow.
Totally.
Yeah, I guess I forget you have a teen in the house because I wouldn't. Wonder is one of the last movies I'd ever assume you would ever watch.
Yeah, Wonder was a book that he read in elementary school. And my wife taught it, I think, as well. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, so they were fans of it. So I read it, too, and I was like, it's a good book, and the movie's very good, too. It's simple. And sort of, you know, ridiculously sentimental and sugary sweet, but it works. It's solid, yeah.
All right. It's a movie. Wonder. Let's see. Okay. So I have one movie that I know is probably horrible, but I had just got, my best friend got married and I was very young. I was in my early 20s and it was an overwhelming night and I went and saw this movie and I remember crying the whole time, but it was because of the wedding and not because of the movie, which is Poetic Justice, but I'm not going to count that. I don't know if that's a very good movie. Yeah. I'm going to say, okay, well, this is kind of cheapy, but the Mr. Rogers documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor?
Oh, God, yeah.
Was very, you know, we were in the midst of a lot of, you know, thank God life is easy and carefree right now, but at the time we were in the midst of the Trump era and things looked incredibly bleak for just humanity and human emotion and the notion that a person in charge would rule and be led by caring and empathy and compassion and was really foreign, and that's what, you know, this is what Mr. Rogers did and that's what he embodied. And you really learn, he was an incredibly sophisticated thinker about children's emotions and about how deeply they feel, even compared to adults, like things really, really affect them and really matter and not talking down to them. And the way he would talk to these, you know, kids who were often scared in his studio audience, and the way he talked to, you know, through the puppets and stuff about really adult things like death and also governments doing bad things like war, like why, was pretty mind-blowing. And the way he completely changed a congressional, I guess it was a committee's opinion about, I guess it was educational funding or something, I can't remember, but they let him, you know, it started with these cynical people going, yeah, whatever, you can talk. And by the end, they were like, you convinced us, we will allocate this money or do whatever, I can't remember. Had me crying. Did you see that movie?
Uh-uh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you should watch it, definitely, particularly yeah. the educator in your house.
Yeah, I will watch that. That sounds cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it's lovely. I didn't see the Tom Hanks scripted version, but I saw the movie.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't see either one. I mean, I think, like, but you know, Hillary's so resistant to anything that will make her cry. She doesn't want to do it, and she definitely doesn't want to watch anything about educators.
I see. I gotcha. So no Stand and Deliver for you.
No, I gotta watch. Yeah, Dangerous Minds by myself. She'll watch like The Substitute or The Principal.
Well, but that's, sure. When they get to kick ass with baseball bats.
Yeah, when they fight the kids, then she's like, "Oh, I'll watch that because that's escapist. It's never gonna happen." You know?
Well, yeah.
At least not for her.
No, yeah. Sadly. I wish teachers got to strike one child per year.
They should be allowed to.
Shouldn't they? I think they should.
They get one
hit. They get to one just free licks. Yeah, whoever's the biggest pain in their ass, just pop them one by the end of the year.
I think it would be very therapeutic and good for everybody. And good for those kids, too.
Yeah, we don't pay them enough, so
yeah,
let them smack a kid around.
Well, I know that with the problem kids that my wife has so often, you know, the problem is the parents. So maybe this kind of thing will send the right message to the right parents.
Or maybe a parent gets popped instead.
Yeah, maybe you pop the parents. That's it. The parents come in and they both get hit in the face.
Pop that parent. Pop that parent.
It's Pop the Parents Day.
All right, well, that's my four. Won't you be my neighbor?
I like that one. I gotta watch that. I'm gonna, my four, I was trying to, Christmas movies, you know, like sports, I don't really care that much about Christmas. I mean, I like shiny lights and decorations and stuff, I guess, but you know, I don't give a shit about Jesus or anything about Christmas. Yeah. But Christmas movies, like sports movies, they make me cry. Like, pretty consistently.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, not a Surviving Christmas starring Ben Affleck, but a Christmas Story makes me cry. Certainly It's a Wonderful Life and Miracle on 34th Street, all of them.
Die Hard.
No, Die Hard doesn't make me cry. It's deeply satisfying, but I guess I don't cry.
Right.
Maybe I should, because Hans Gruber falls very, very far at the
end. He does very, so far.
Has to fall a long way. But the one I went with was, because it, like, now when I watch it, as soon as it starts, I'm, because I know that Tim is going to speak eventually, I start crying right away. It's Scrooged.
Niagara Falls.
Niagara Falls. I think part of it, too, is that it's Bill Murray, who was, you know, my hero when this movie came out.
Yeah.
He was my 80s hero. Bill Murray was the guy I wanted to be most admired, you know, in the movies.
Yeah.
It's a kind of a maligned, critically maligned movie, and I know people love it, and it's sort of a perennial thing.
Well,
I
think it was at the time, but I think its reputation has certainly been resuscitated by cult status.
Yeah, but I feel like at the same time that there's like consistent backlash against it even now. Like,
oh, really?
You know, the like critical think pieces is like, stop saying Scrooged is a good movie sort of thing.
Oh.
I see these things, you know.
Well, that's some contrarian bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck these guys.
Yeah, it's fine. Whatever. It is a cult movie, so cult movies are weird. It has a weird tone to it. But I think it's consistent, and I think it's funny, but it's Something about the...
I know what it is.
What is it?
It's how goddamn sweet and perfect Karen Allen is.
There's that. Oh my God, yeah. Like, every time she talks, it's heartbreaking, but... Yeah, and she has a visible effect on Bill Murray on screen.
Yeah.
The way they're...
The genuine smile that you get out of him, which is rare.
Yeah, yeah. And he looks genuinely tender. And in that flashback scene where he has the long, you know, silly extension hair, and he gives her, you know, she gives him the book of Kama Sutra, and he's like, yeah, I've done that. A friend of mine did that.
Yeah.
Like that scene, like he's so, you can see Bill Murray in love, which isn't a thing you normally think of.
It's true.
It's really, really cool. So yeah, I think there is definitely, she's like sort of a heart and soul of the thing. But also just watching his transformation and all, like when he wakes up, in the under the street, you know, and he says his jokes about, hey lady, thanks for the shot. And then he finds Herm frozen to death with his watch in there. Mm-hmm. And he's like, come on, Herm, give me a happy ending. Like that shit, like his performance in that absolutely kills me.
Yeah. All great. Even Alfre Woodard and her kid and the silent kid.
Yeah. Woodard's amazing.
And certainly his brother as his dad and
his brother is his brother, and his other brother is the friend of his...
Meat.
Yeah. Yeah.
What, five pounds of chuck roast? What is it?
Of premium ground chuck or something like
premium
that.
Premium ground chuck.
And then his real-life brother at the end has the last line in the movie. He says... Yeah. That's my brother. He's the king of Christmas. And every time that dude says that, I'm crying. I'm just a mess. I'm a mess.
Yeah. Scrooge is a good one. That's great. Well, this is my number five. I got a lot of other part ones, but I think this is just also the time in my life. Cause it's not, I don't think it's a good movie. And you probably never seen it, but it's a movie from the early 90s, if I'm right, starring Al Pacino and Michelle Pfeiffer called Frankie and Johnny, which is adapted from Frankie and Johnny and the Clair de Lune, which is a it's supposed to be a couple of middle-aged schlubs
who have
a sort of a one-night stand, and it all takes place in the one sort of apartment, and they famously wake up naked or they're fucking actually when the lights come up and it's on screen. And I mean, on stage, Michael Shannon and I think Audra McDonald just did it or something. But anyway, I think Kathy Bates was played in Chicago or on Broadway. And then Michelle Pfeiffer played it and they, you know, try to dowdy her up. It doesn't, that aspect of it doesn't quite work. But it's about two sad people who kind of decide to make a go of it. He's a short order cook at like a Mel's Diner type diner, a Greek diner. And he's just got out of jail and he lives alone and watched Jeopardy. And she's sort of a unlucky in love lady who is a waitress there. And Al Pacino is very sort of just kind of goes straight for her. And it's like, let's go out with me. And she's like, no, what are you talking about? But there's this great scene where she's... in her apartment alone, and I think she's rejected him or whatever, but then she's eating peanut butter out of the jar with a spoon and chokes and like literally doesn't know what to do because she's choking and ends up having to Heimlich herself. And then she just like sits on the toilet just like exhausted and sad because she almost died eating peanut butter. It's a very kind of pretty lonely movie it must be cheesy, but there's something about it that I always really got me, you know, my romantic gushy heart.
Yeah. So, I guess I'm that way with Harry and Sally. Harry and Sally makes me cry a lot in that sweet way, I guess.
Yeah. And it's a good one. I mean, if you think about it, what's so remarkable about Harry Met Sally is that, they made Billy Crystal a legitimate, love interest.
Yeah, yeah.
That's weird. that was
possible. Yeah, that's crazy.
You would not think that would be possible. But he's a very, like you'll like him. And no one likes Bill Murray. I mean, Billy Crystal. Yeah. He's the opposite of Bill Murray. Like, you don't, like, I think, like, you know, like, old Broadway ladies like him and vaudeville fans and stuff. There's not a contingent of people who are just, like, dying for Billy Crystal to, like, have his Bill Murray moment. Like, you know, or, like...
I thought you were a Forget Paris apologist. I don't know.
Oh, my God. Forget Paris. I can't
it's
do
so it. Funny. What's her name? It really did make Billy Crystal more accessible to me, anyway.
Yeah, I think that and what's the movie with Gregory Hines that I love?
Running Scared.
Running Scared, yeah. I think those movies kind of...
And I like City Slickers, you know. Yeah. I'll admit to that. Uh-huh. I like that.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, that's Frank.
And I do own a copy of My Giant, but that's only because Steven Seagal is in it.
Oh, my God. I saw that in theater. Wow. Yeah, bro.
Yeah, my last one is super weird. It's a horror movie that I've seen a gazillion times, and I find it very comforting whenever there's death. It's so weird. Whenever I experience a death in the family or a friend or something, I find comfort in this movie, Jacob's Ladder, the original version with Tim Robbins, the Adrian Lyne movie.
Is that an original? There's been one since then?
There was a remake a couple years ago.
Oh, okay.
It was awful. It was unbelievably awful. But Jacob's Ladder is like, you know, on first viewing is terrifying, but it made me cry at the end, the very first time I saw it. And having had that emotional upheaval, unexpected emotional response at the end of this intense, bizarre, disgusting horror movie, like colors. Like if I watch it now, I'm crying right away.
Right.
Because I know. And Tim Robbins in this movie is so good. I know people are on the fence about him sometimes, but he's so good. Like talk about a sweet performance, a soulful performance. He's in this bizarre, surreal circumstance with monsters and all this stuff, and you just want to see him through it. And every time he gets terrified, not only are you terrified, but you feel so awful for him being terrified, you know, in the moments that follow. I don't know. For me, it's just one of the best movies ever made. So,
wow. Yeah, I haven't seen it in a long time. I do remember liking it and thinking it was very effective. But Tim Robbins is such a weird case because it's like, I sort of feel like by all measure, his talent and his sort of physical stature, he should have been more of a movie star than he was, but he made such weird choices and sort of has such a withholding energy, kind of a soft energy.
Mm-hmm.
Like he speaks in that kind of soft voice and he's just not very commanding. And I think thus had a very bizarre career. And like you like him when you see him, you're always like, oh yeah, Tim Robbins. Like I may be getting the story wrong, but I think the story is this, that Christine, my wife and I were in Italy, let's say. I think we were in Rome. I could be wrong. And we were walking down the street.
No wonder you don't have a summer home. You're going off to Rome and Italy and Spain.
All the time, yeah. And
you got to make a choice here.
And we passed Tim Robbins, and we just looked at the other one. Huh, that's Tim Robbins. And then we just walked on. Like, we weren't that excited. We were just like, to randomly see a random American movie star in a different country. We didn't like go, oh, that's so crazy. You know, we were just like, eh, yeah, that's Tim
Robbins. Yeah, that's like when I saw... my wife and I were up in Ventura and we saw Bill Paxton and we were like, oh, hey, Bill Paxton. And I really like Bill Paxton, but it's not like we freaked out or anything. We're like,
hey. If I saw him now, I'd freak out literally.
Well, that would be weird. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be
more of a Jacob's Ladder scenario than seeing Tim Robbins.
What were your also-rans that you didn't mention?
I think we actually, I like slipped him in everywhere because Harry and Sally, and I mentioned Rudy. Yeah.
I'd mentioned Poetic Justice, but there are parts of both Up and Inside Out that really get to me. Although I didn't love either of them as a whole movie.
Sure.
A Dead Man Walking really affected me.
Uh-huh, that's a great one. Yeah, that's a great one.
Same with Glory. Really affected me in points. Mm-hmm. And I don't think this affected me when I first saw it, but on a rewatch, I was in an emotional state of my life, but I saw this on a plane and I think I cried the entire time, and that's the most cliche Field of Dreams.
Yeah.
And it's not even, I mean, at the end of the day, we're, most of us men are have been hindered with emotionally unavailable or literally dead fathers. And so we're only human when, you know, you want to have a catch, you know.
Oh, father-son stuff.
Father-son stuff, yeah.
It murders me. You know, it's funny you say Field of Dreams, and that's my dad's absolute favorite movie.
Oh, it's such a dad movie.
It's such a dad
movie. That and Green Mile and Shawshank.
Yeah. He's all right with Shawshank. I don't think he cared for Green Mile because he normally like dislikes supernatural shit. He doesn't like, you know, horror shit or sci-fi shit. He doesn't like supernatural stuff. So it, like Field of Dreams, I always thought was silly because of the supernatural element and the ghosts and shit. But he loved it. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I saw The Rookie and was like, oh, this movie's amazing and it's real and it doesn't have ghosts and my dad will love it. And he's like, this is fucking boring. So I was like, all right, so your baseball movies need ghosts?
Okay. Yeah, apparently. You need ghosts. Angels.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if there's a sports crossover. Maybe he'll like The Sixth Man.
Angels in the Outfield.
Yeah, Angels in the Outfield. Right.
Or Space Jam.
Isn't there a new one coming
out? I think Angels in the Outfield is Joseph Gordon-Levitt at like age 11 or something, right? And Tony Danza, isn't it?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
That's my weird memory.
Yeah, that sounds right.
For crap.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was a lovely discussion.
Yes, sir. That was. Those are movies that make me cry. I'm sure I'll be texting you ones that I couldn't think of over the next couple days.
I'm sure I will too, because I like drove myself into a panic. Like, what has made me cry? I was like literally just looking at my collections of movies. Like, what has made me cry?
Yeah, I know. It's so, yeah.
And it's a lot. There's a lot more movies that have made me cry, but you know.
Yeah.
That's how it goes. That's the movies. Sometimes they make you cry.
Yeah, they do. All right, fellas. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see you next time on the Film Pigs podcast.